Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. So what do InvestTalk insiders know that maybe others don't? They have access to the answers, investment resources that come straight from the desks of professional investors, special watch lists created to give investors an idea of the type of investments the pros consider. The webinar archive provides access to various lessons about how to invest properly. Just click on the InvestTalk tab to sign up. It's free on InvestTalk.com. End of commercial. And now today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, June 6th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk. And our mission each and every weekday is to promote above average investing for the average investor. Try to help you rise above the tide of what normal people do and make decisions that are in your best interest long term. And hopefully and usually that entails logic as opposed to emotion, which is what most people use. Now, if you invest some time and attention to proven principles of investing, you'll see better results. And that's what we try to partake on you, the audience, each and every weekday. And with interest rates so low, investors are constantly searching for yield. And that in itself can be an emotional thing because retirees need yield. People want yield for their savings. And right now, we are in the midst of what we call financial repression. You know, people chase cash flows, and this is pushing people into areas of the market that are not only risky, but also assets who have tax treatments that are atypical for the average dividend payer. Think of multinationals versus your typical Procter & Gamble's of the world. There are multiple asset classes that have special tax treatments for dividends that are paid to investors. And here are some examples. Just talked about masculine partnerships. They're taxed at your ordinary income tax rate. Not only that, but the government treats income from MLPs as unrelated business taxable income, UBTI. And if you get too much of this income in a tax-deferred account like a 401k or an IRA, you have to file a separate tax return on behalf of that account. So keep this in mind when you're investing in your retirement accounts. Then there's foreign companies. Dividends are taxed normally as a qualified dividend, but there's something called a foreign tax withholding. Many times the home country will withhold taxes as well, 15% or more in many cases. Now, in a normal taxable account, you're able to recover that charge through what is called a foreign tax credit when you file your taxes, meaning you paid those taxes. But in a tax-deferred account, like an IRA 401k, there's no way to recoup that withholding tax. Now, most British companies do not have foreign tax withholdings because of the relationship between the U.S. and Britain. Then there's real estate investment trusts. This is income from a REIT, and it's taxed at an ordinary income tax rate. Now, there's no complexities with UBTI and all that that make master limited partnerships a little complex in tax-deferred accounts. So, REITs are very good, are more advantageous to be held within a tax-deferred account because you're not paying that full ordinary income tax rate. All right, now while tax rates are not the most exciting part of the investing environment, investing world, they need to be taken into account. You got to understand them. Otherwise, you could have big headaches like the UBTI if you have it in a tax deferred account. So think about these things when you're chasing dividends. Understand that because you might look on a website or do some research and it might say, oh, well, it yields 7%. And this other company yields 5%. I want that higher yield of 7%. Well, if all of a sudden you're taxed, tax rate is twice as high, maybe even more for the 7% yielder, well, effectively, you're actually getting less. So you have to understand these dynamics, right? And when you're chasing yield, you're looking for dividends, understand the risk you're taking. Now, do you have questions about dividends, interests, taxes, investing? Whatever it is, I'm here for you. Let's check in now with our 24-hour listener line. That number, as always, is 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. This is Pete from Vegas. The question I have has to do with receiving dividends. I know many a times you've said you have to own something. I don't know, let's call it Microsoft. The question I have is, do you really have to own it the whole day? Meaning, let's assume I owned Microsoft, and on the X day, I sell it at middle of the day. And let's assume, by the same coincidence, a friend of mine bought Microsoft towards the end of the day. We both owned it some portion of the day. Will both of us get it? Will none of us get it? Will only one or the other get it? I hope you get the question. Again, this is Pete signing off in sunny Vegas. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, that's a good question. So for everybody out there, dividends are distributed on a regular basis from companies that pay dividends. And you have to own it on the X date, the X dividend date. And that's not the date that you get paid. It's usually 3 to 4 weeks after the X date is when you actually get it in your account. But you have to own it on the X date. And no, you don't. It's not that you buy it on the X date. You need to own it when the stock opens that morning. Okay, when trading opens that morning, you need to own it if you want to get that dividend. Now, you can actually sell it on the day of the X dividend date. So you could buy it the day before the X dividend date and sell it on the day of the X dividend date, and you'll still get it. Okay, understand that. So, but usually the stock, and everyone's saying, well, then why wouldn't you just buy it before the X dividend date and sell it on the same day? Well, usually the stock will decline the amount of the dividend. And why is that? Well, all of a sudden that amount is gone from future shareholders. They're not going to get that. So they're going to discount that future dividend by whatever that dividend amount is, 20 cents a share, 50 cents a share, whatever that is. And that money is leaving the company, meaning value is being taken away and given to shareholders. And if you're buying it on that day, you're not one of those shareholders that got it. So that's why you have that change in market value generally. Now, it's not always exactly because, you know, if the market's up, maybe it holds up better than, it goes down less than the overall dividend. If the market's down or that sector's down for that day, maybe it'll go down more than the amount of the dividend. Okay, so you know, a lot of people have tried to do some financial engineering and try to play that game, and it just doesn't work, really, to be honest with you. Now, let's also try to answer a question sent in via text. And if you want to text a question, you can still do that. You can text it to 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. And we will also answer it on the next program, or maybe live, we can do it. Now, the question is, would shareholders of a stock paying a low dividend be better off if the company didn't pay a dividend at all? I was looking at Starbucks' 1.44% dividend. Well, there's different arguments. And I'm a big fan of dividends. And why am I a big fan of dividends? The main reason is because usually, big blue chip companies who don't have a lot of growth prospects, they start to reach. They start to acquire companies. They start to start new areas of the business that maybe they don't have expertise in. And they tend to misallocate capital, meaning they don't spend that money well. So it's better off for shareholders to get that money in my pocket, because I think I can allocate that capital, new capital, better than the company can. Now, if it's a low or a young company, low market cap, but it's growing and they need that money or they're using that money to reinvest in their business, I actually think it's better if they don't pay a dividend. Because they need that money. They're gonna allocate that capital well because their business is growing and hopefully their margins are good. And over the long term, the money spent on growing that business will pay off for shareholders. That's what generally would be the case. Every situation is different. There's big companies that allocate capital very well. And holding on to more makes more sense. Others, not so much. So to me, it's a case-by-case basis. Now, if you'd like to learn more about using charts to analyze companies, see our recommended book section of investtalk.com. Also, join our InvestTalk Insider program. It is free, and we offer some chart lessons there as well. So join up when you're ready on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. Now, our InvestTalk number, our anytime number for instant answers is 888-99-CHART. I hope to hear from you.
Hi, guys. I was calling to get your opinion on a stock, Cardinal Health, the symbol CAH. Wanted to see if this would be a good time to get in and what you think the future is on this stock. I'll be listening for the answer. Thank you for your show.
All right, looking at Cardinal Health. The symbol is CAH, and this is a medical device company. And pharmaceutical as well. They make medical devices and pharmaceutical products. So it's pretty well diversified. Large company, market cap of $26 billion. Kind of a slow grower. You know, not growing its earnings dramatically. Earnings grew about 7% or so last quarter. It's been kind of all over the place. My valuation figures say it's kind of fairly valued. It's not overvalued. It's not undervalued. Yields about 2.3%. I lump this in with the whole sector as a whole. I'm not a fan of the healthcare sector right now because of the high cost of drugs. That you're going to continue to see the politicians rail on them, and I don't think it's at a peak yet. I think it's just starting to show that these drug companies are just raising prices and raising the cost of healthcare. And I think there will be a shakeup, and that could be Obamacare being rescinded. It could be more government crackdown on pricing of drugs, things like that. And I think that's going to weigh on the sector as a whole. So if I were to invest in Cardinal Health, I would need it to be cheap. And to me, it's not cheap yet. I would need this to be in the 50s, and right now it's in the around $80 a share. So keep it on your watch list. It's a good company, but I just don't like the sector at the moment. All right, now, year-to-date gains in commodity indexes are 2 to 3 times the gains of the broad U.S. bond and stock indexes. So should you be thinking about investing in commodities? And then I'm going to give you a sense of how you should be investing in commodities, right? And which areas of the commodity space as well, because they're not all treated equal. So that's one of my talking points today. I also want to talk about the dangers of over-diversifying. Also, how to retire on $1 million. And then a topic I didn't get to yesterday, maybe I'll get to today, when tax breaks for owning a home are overvalued. All right. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. Emotions, not logic, usually rules are investing habits. And in many ways, this predisposes us to buying high and selling low, making bad investment decisions. So how do you fight that urge? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for making it.
I just wanted to get your take on Tesoro, TSO. I'm thinking about picking some up in the, like, 68 range. And I also wanted to find out how do you feel about the dividend and how oil is over the next probably year or two.
Okay, you're looking to pick it up in the 68 range?
Yeah.
67 is probably the best support. There is a lot of support, actually, right around the 66 to 67 range. So that's certainly where I would pick it up if you're looking to buy shares at Tesoro. Now, if the economy gets weaker, I could easily see this headed to 50, though. And I actually think it will eventually get there. There might be a bounce before that, but that's where I think it's probably going. Now, it is relatively cheap. Yields about 2.6%. The payout ratio is very, very fine. It's only 15%, very low. So I think that dividend is safe. So, you know, I kind of like it, just a little bit lower than when you're looking at it.
Oh, okay. So do you think oil is, like, trending downward right now?
I do think that oil is – I think it's going to bounce around here up in the high 40s, low 50s range for a little while. But I do think it'll eventually go lower. I don't think there's much upside to oil from here. I mean, 60 would be probably as much as I would expect, at least in the near term.
Oh, okay. All right, Justin. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling, Art. Let's go to Matt in Redwood City.
Hello, Justin. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for making it. What can I do for you?
Hey, just two questions. One is, the IT sector, mm-hmm. information technology, mm-hmm. do you see that as a favorable sector? And if so, what do you think of a 1 to 3 year investment in QQQ at this time?
I'm not a big fan. We're actually short the Qs at this moment. And we think, you know, if the market goes into a recession, you know, yes. Sure, is information technology a good sector long term? Yeah, I think our world is going towards using more technology, and but it is a competitive space. But as we go into a bear market, the Qs will go down with the overall market, and that's why I would not be, if you're looking 1 to 3 years, I'm not a fan of the Qs.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Justin.
No problem, Matt. Thanks for calling. Let's go to John in North Carolina. How you doing, John?
Hey, Justin. How are you?
Doing well.
So I've heard you mention that you think fertilizer-type stocks might be in for a rebound. So I've identified one that I think may fit your criteria as a decent value stock. Mm-hmm. It's called Agrium, A-G-U. Mm-hmm. So what kind of caught my eye was it has a fairly low forward PE, mm-hmm. What looks like a reasonable price to book and reasonable about 15 return on equity. So I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Well, we actually own Agrium, AGU, for some of our managed accounts, not all of them, but some of them. We like Agrium. We think it's a strong company with strong record of profitability. Modest amount of debt. They obviously been dragged down with the rest of the commodity space and fertilizer space. But like I've been saying recently, I kind of like the fertilizer area, and we think Agrium is a good value long term.
Perfect, Greg. Thanks so much.
No problem, John. That was Agrium. A G U is the symbol. Now let's get a quick update on the market today. We had the Dow up 78 points, the S&P up 11, and the NASDAQ was up 36. It was a pretty solid up day after a pretty solid down day yesterday. So over the week so far, it's been pretty much flat. Right about flat line on the S&P. And you had a pretty strong non-manufacturing, ISM non-manufacturing index came out today. And that was actually stronger than expected. So it showed that the service sector is not doing as poorly as I think a lot of people were thinking. You have the ADP figure tomorrow, jobs figure tomorrow. So that will give us a preview of Friday's job number. And I think that will change the thinking of the market one way or the other when it comes to the Fed, either increasing or decreasing the odds of a rate hike. So modest update. Still a lot of chop, and I'm still expecting a broad market top. Now, after the break, we're going to get to our discussion on commodities and their outperformance and how you should play that sector. Also, diversification. How important is diversification, and when is too much diversification? And then, I think this is big, is in this environment, how do you retire on $1 million? Everyone used to say, $1 million, I can retire. And you can if certain things line up. We're going to talk about that. Now, we're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. Think about the risks you're taking in your portfolio. The potential for greater returns come with greater risk. And understanding this crucial trade-off between risk and reward can help separate true opportunities from bad ones. So take our free risk analysis quiz on investtalk.com. Coming up next, we'll take your call at 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing. KPP Financial Services serves clients all across the U.S. And if you'd like to have Steve review your retirement portfolio personally, you'll be ahead of the game. He makes time each month for our podcast subscribers on Skype or phone. The next scheduled date is July 20th. To set up a time, go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review. We continue now with this Wednesday, July 6th, Invest Talk. Justin's here to answer your questions. He's easy to reach, 888-99-CHART. Check in right now.
Let's go to Richard in Oakland. How you doing, Richard?
Hi, Justin. How are you?
Doing good. Good for you.
Good. So I got a question. Great Basin Scientific, GBSN. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, this is a penny stock. I mean, it's trading at $1.54 at the close today. The fundamentals are poor. They don't make money. Their revenue is about $2 million a year. Their market cap is about $6 million. They're burning about $30 million in cash flow per year. They've never been profitable. I don't know what there is to like about it. I mean, what makes you looking at it?
Well, there was some good information as far as some funding going on and some FDA approvals on some of their information. So I didn't know. Maybe it might be something that might make it in the long, or it's just not something to even look at.
I mean, to me, that's just a story, and I see no basis for that story to be true, and I see no basis for this company to ever create shareholder value, and it hasn't done that, and it doesn't look like it's going to do that. So I would stay away from it. Obviously things could change, but I mean, this is something that is likely going to kill your portfolio as opposed to help it.
Yeah, don't even gamble on it then. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. And that goes for any penny stock. You know, a lot of penny stocks are stories. You hear a good story. If you get emailed a good story, you definitely shouldn't buy it, because that's how a lot of scams work. And you can make money, a good amount of money in the short term, but usually they're bad long-term bets. And if you're going to buy them, you're extremely high risk. Understand that and know that it should be just for a trade, not for anything long-term. Let's go to Judy in San Jose. How you doing, Judy?
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. Can you fair?
Yeah. I'd like to ask you a question. Normally, I just heard you talk to one of the call-in person regarding the oil price. Mm-hmm. So I just like to know, what's the symbol for the oil?
If you just want oil price?
The symbol, the stock symbol.
Well, I mean, there is oil, OIL is a symbol. I mean, there's nothing stock symbol that will give you the underlying price of the price of oil. There are ETFs that track it, like USO, but it's not really a good gauge over the long term. It's more of like a day-to-day thing because they use futures. It's complex, but there's no one particular symbol that will give you the underlying price of oil. You have to, you can look that up on Yahoo Finance and Google Finance and things like that. And there's ways to look it up online, but there's no ETF that tracks the price of oil dollar for dollar.
I see. Okay. Thank you so much.
No problem,
great
Judy.
Show. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for calling. All right, let's get to, it's a good segue to our talking point today, which is about commodity prices. And for the first time in years, commodities are doing something they haven't done, which is they're outperforming major asset classes like stocks, bonds, and real estate. Now, since the beginning of the year, the Thomson Reuters Core Commodity CRB Index is up about 9.5%. That's compared to about 3.5% for the U.S. stock market, 4.4% for the bond market, and about 7% for the global real estate equity market. The issue I see, though, is it's narrowing. You're starting to see areas of the commodity space take off, and I think some are behind us. And the ones I think that are more behind us are energy stocks and energy prices. I think the bulk of those recent gains are behind us. Now, I think precious metals, which have been on fire this year, are going to go higher. Now, could they pull back and will they likely pull back at some point in this year? And I'm talking about pullback, like not like a 5% pullback. I'm talking a 10, 20, maybe even 30% pullback in precious metals. I think that's very possible. But to me, that's it's in a long-term uptrend. So I don't treat all commodities the same. I really don't. And, you know, there's a lot of commodity mutual funds out there, commodity indexes out there, and you can invest in that way. And you'll get exposure to a lot of different types of commodities. You'll get exposure to agricultural commodities, energy commodities, industrial metals, precious metals. But actually, a lot of those commodity indexes have a low allocation to precious metals. It's usually more energy and agricultural focused. So to me, if I'm playing the commodity space, I want to buy actual individual companies, individual miners of commodities, producers of those commodities. Now, that is also higher risk. Understand that. Usually, miners have a much higher correlation to the underlying commodity price, meaning like gold miners, for example. Usually, you moves about three times as much as the price of gold. So if gold goes up 1%, usually miners will go up 3%. And vice versa. Gold goes down 1%, miners go down 3%. Okay, so understand there's more risk there. But what I like is that you're buying an actual asset of a company. You're investing in a company. And a lot of times those companies pay you dividends. And I like that. Those companies tend to have positive cash flow as long as the commodity price is high enough. And there's a lot out there. Some are better than others. And you can pick and choose and find the ones that have good management and are allocating capital properly. So that's why if I'm investing in the commodity space, I want to own individual companies like that caller called in earlier about Agrium. We like companies that have positive cash flow and dividends and good management and can make adjustments in the market and understand the market to maximize the value for shareholders. Right. So that's our main talking point today, and I hope it gives you a good message on how you should deploy some of your capital in the commodity space. Now, 888-99-CHART is how to reach us by phone anytime. You can call or you can text it. So let's answer a text question. This one is from Dave in Pennsylvania. He says, hi, guys. I'm curious in learning to use the MACD to help select a bottom when trying to buy on the dip. Thanks again. Well, this goes into chart reading, and that's difficult for me to kind of explain over the radio. But if you're an InvestTalk insider, there's chart lessons, and I talk about MACD. There is a lesson there on MACD that can give you a little understanding of how to use it. And usually this is, quickly, it's about divergence, meaning if the stock maybe is making a new low and it looks really bearish or bad, but the MACD is not making a new low, it's not going as low as the previous low, that can start to tell you that maybe the selling is close to over with and could be turning around. It's very possible. Okay, so it's not foolproof. It's an art. Chart reading is an art. It's not a science. So understand that. Okay? And you have to feel charts a lot of times. You have to look at a lot before you can really make a sound decision using MACD. And it's one factor. It's not the only factor. It is one factor to consider. So if you want to learn more, become an InvestTalk insider. Let's go to Dan in Arizona. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, sorry, it's Baron.
Oh, it's Baron. How you doing, Baron?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I just had a question about a stock, Scorpio Tankers, STNG.
Okay.
It's a small cap oil tanker company. From what I see, the earnings are supposed to increase by roughly 15% next year, but it's been getting beat up pretty badly over the last little bit, and I was wondering what your thoughts long-term on it were.
So Scorpio Tankers provides seaborne transportation of refined petroleum products in the international shipping markets. Has about 79 tankers. So it's a $752 million market cap, small cap name. Revenue is about $760 million. So about 1-to-1 price to sales ratio. Yields about 11, almost 12%, looks like. But their cash flow isn't that strong. I don't like that. It's negative. It's pretty much stayed consistently negative. I don't like that. What's its book value doing? Its book value has kind of stayed flat around the $6 to $8 range, kind of fluctuates. I like to see companies that are creating value. Now, you're getting that dividend, so that's a positive. I actually like the value because it does have decent earnings, but it's just so the chart is so negative. It's so low.
Right.
Let me look at it from a long-term perspective. It's at an all-time low.
I believe so.
Yeah, I don't like charts at all-time low. It has a decent amount of debt, and it seems to be going up. I don't hate it just because it is so cheap. From a price to earnings ratio, let's see, what's the price? What's the PE? It's about 4, so that's super cheap.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a very complicated one. I'm gonna give it a slightly below average rating. It's a decent value, strong dividend, but I don't like how they're not creating cash flow for that dividend. I wouldn't say the dividend is super safe. I'll say that.
Yeah.
It's certainly a high-risk dividend. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. I don't hate it completely. I don't love it. It's very high risk, but it could be worth the effort at these levels so low. So I see what you're looking at, and I like the deep value play, but the debt worries me and the negative cash flow worries me.
Okay. Is this one where you would wait for it to trade sideways for a while before you would...
Well, if it trades sideways from here, that's just creating what we call a bear flag, and would mean that
okay.
It's probably just going to break down. I would look for a high volume reversal. So today it was a pretty high volume. It was up decently on the day, but it didn't close above yesterday's high. So it needs to close above the 20-day and hopefully the 50-day moving average. It needs to be on high volume. And when that happens, then I could say, okay, things are looking up for it. This could be is actually a good place to take a flyer on it because it had a good volume today. It wasn't super convincing, But it's giving me enough to say, okay, if I want to take a lot of risk here, this would be the time you want to do it, especially after this big drop over the past month. So, but that would be a trade, complete trade. Long term, the debt worries me. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling, Dan. Well, I know that was kind of all over the place, but you know, you have to look at all these different factors. And I was just looking at literally a half dozen or so, and there are hundreds of factors that need to be considered as well. So technically, as a trade, it looks good, but long term, I'm a little worried. Let's go to Ron in San Jose. How you doing, Ron?
Good, Justin. How are you?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
Well, I was I've been looking for a dips in mining stocks. I heard you talking about it today, and so I wanted to ask you about GDX, but then I heard you said you sounded like you didn't prefer ETFs, and that's an ETF. You'd rather go for individual stocks. So I was actually looking at NEM, Newmont Mining, is more of an established mining company, and NG, Nova Gold, as a speculation. Wonder what your thoughts were on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the gold mining sector overall is very, very overbought at these levels. I still like it long term, but I do think that we're close to kind of peaking out on bullishness right now. I could be wrong. I kind of thought that a couple months ago, and it had a small pullback and then just rallied right through it. I like Newmont. I don't know about NG that well. I haven't really looked into it. Actually, I've never heard of it. I've been doing a lot of research on gold miners, and I didn't see Nova Gold. So it would be certainly very speculative. They don't pay a dividend like that. So, but you know, it's a small company, and it's certainly going to have a lot of firepower if the gold miners continue to move higher. So I like Newmont Mining, definitely be the safer play. Keep it on your watch list, but I wouldn't get overly bullish on gold miners at these levels in the short to medium term. I think we'll have another pullback that is, like I said, 10 to 30% pullback from here that will give you some good buying opportunity. I would keep both of those on your watch list and pick them up on that pullback.
Agreed. I've been looking, Justin, at the daily chart waiting for a pullback because the long-term monthly charts look like, you know, they're ready to roll for a while. So just looking for a good point on the daily charts to, you know, start scaling in and then hold it for, you know, a year.
Yeah.
And
it's been difficult for sure to find a good entry point because they don't really pull back much, right? So I understand your frustration. Right. It's definitely difficult, but you know, right now a lot of amateur investors are very bullish on the sector, and that usually does not mean good things in the short term. And so I do think we're at the precipice of a pullback in that sector, and maybe the jobs number on Friday is going to be the start of that, and I think that's certainly likely.
All right, you just confirmed what I was thinking. I appreciate that a lot, Justin.
No problem, Ron. Thanks for the call. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. If you have a question, we still have time, about 10 minutes left in the show. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Let's talk about the dangers of over-diversifying your portfolio. Now, a lot of people talk about diversification. We talk about it here on air a lot, and it's important for people to be diversified, and it's a way for you to reduce the overall risk in your portfolio. And the way you do that and get diversified is by spreading out your investments across different sectors, industries, and sometimes even countries. Right? Now, there are many studies demonstrating why diversification works. But simply put, spreading your investments across these different types of investments that have different correlations to each other. And this ultimately will reduce the volatility of your portfolio. Now, if you diversify properly, you're less likely to experience major drops in your portfolio, because when one sector experiences maybe tough times or maybe one stock, others might be doing well and thriving. And this provides more consistent overall performance. And this is important. So, and no matter how diversified your portfolio is, you can never reduce risk, however. It's never gone. Whenever you're trying to make money in anything, there's always some type of risk. Okay, when you're investing, there's always some type of risk. And you can reduce risk associated with any individual stock, meaning bad earnings or bankruptcy or whatever, by having a lot of them. And sometimes a lot is a subjective term. Now, if you look at what statisticians look at when they are trying to help decide how much is enough to create a diversified portfolio. And the statistics show that it's about 20 stocks will get you sufficiently diversified. Now, when you talk about risk, there's a term called standard deviation. And this just talks about the average volatility of a stock. And the average volatility of a single stock is about 49.2%. Now, if you properly diversify and you get 20 stocks in a portfolio, it will reduce the overall standard deviation of that portfolio to about 19.2%, which is huge. So those 20 stocks reduce your volatility by 20%. But once you go above 20 to maybe 1,000, it only reduces your risk by 0.8%. It's really not that much more. So there's really no point in going much beyond 20. We usually have about 30 in our portfolios. Okay, so, you know, true diversification isn't putting all your, owning a bunch of different stocks. It's about having a plan, a diversified plan, to invest across different company sizes, industries, sectors, countries, etc. All right. So understand what diversity means and make sure you're not over-diversified. Let's go to Vic and Hayward. How are you doing, Vic?
Yeah, hi, Justin. Nice show. Thank you.
No problem.
I'm thinking of this BCS, Boy, Charlie, Sam.
Barclays.
It's been trading very heavily. It's a Barclays Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend buying or shorting it?
I would recommend probably shorting it. It wouldn't be my number one bank to short, but it's headquartered in Europe, and they're having problems. And to me, the negative interest rates in Europe are wreaking havoc on banks. You're talking about Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse, which are probably having the most difficulty out of all the banks in Europe. And Barclays is probably not far behind. So, no, I would not buy Barclays. It's, if anything, I'd short it. But it's down so much, I probably wouldn't short it either. I would rather short Deutsche Bank or Credit Suisse.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for calling, Vic. Now, our time is up. Now, it doesn't matter where you live. You can take Steve up on his offer to review your retirement portfolio. On July 20th, he'll be hooking up via Skype and telephone. To save your place in the schedule that day, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KP Financial. We are a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.